The 11th parak talks about various halachas as it relates to the korban chatas, and we're going to start out with Mishnah Aleph, discussing if the clothing of the kohen who is involved in the avoda of a korban chatas, if it gets splattered with blood, when do you have to clean it? When don't you have to clean it? So the Mishnah says as follows: Dam chatas shenitas ala beged. If you have the blood of a korban chatas that got splattered onto the clothing of the kohen, hareze ta'un kibus, you have to wash it. There's an obligation to wash that clothing. Now, just a little bit background before we continue with the Mishnah. In Parsha Tzav in Vayikra Perek Vav, it talks about Zos Toras Achatas. These are the halachas. This is the law of the Korban Chatas, and it goes and says that the Korban Chatas is Kodshei Kodashim, so just like the Ola has to be shechted in the northern part of the Azara, so too the Chatas has to be shechted in the northern part of the Azara, and that's where the Kohen who is involved in it, that's where he's going to eat the meat of the Korban Chatas. It has to be Yochelena B'makom Kadosh. It's eaten in a holy place. That means in the Azara, not outside the courtyard of the base of Mikdash. And in addition, then it says that if the blood splatters on the clothing of the Kohen, you have to wash it, B'makom Kadosh, you also have to wash it in the Azara. Now what's clear here is that this is talking about the chataos that are done on the Mizbeach outside, the Zrikas done outside, and those are the ones you can eat. Accordingly, this whole discussion is talking about the chataos Hachitzonios, as we saw in Ezu Makom on the fifth barak. There are two major categories of chataos: those that have the zrika done outside, you get to eat their meat, but those that are done on the inside in the Mizbeach HaPnimi, those you don't get to eat any of the meat. The Kohanim don't get to eat any of the meat. They are burnt outside of the base of Mikdash. So the Mishnah continues as follows: Afa pishen akasa medavar ella bine echalos. Even though the pasuk that I just read that talks about the kivus of the clothing when they get splattered on, that's talking about the category of chataos that are eaten. Those are the ones that the zrika is done on the mizbeach hachitzoni, the mizbeach outside. Chene emar, as the pasuk said explicitly, b'makom kadosh te'achel, is talking about the eating of the chataos, and that only the ones that have the zrika outside are eaten. And so too, when we talk about the requirement to launder, it's also only talking about the chataos that are done outside. Despite that, this halacha is going to apply of kivus, of washing the clothing, is going to apply echad an echales, whether we're talking about the classification of the chataos that are eaten, those that have the zrika done outside, vechad apnimis, and those that are done on the inside, teunas kibus, regardless, if a kohen has his clothing splattered, he's going to be required to wash that clothing. Shneamar, as the pasuk says, toras hachatas, because as we started these psukim talking about the halachas of the chatas, it says zos toras hachatas, which means Torah achas lechol chatos. That means that whenever we have a korban chatas, whether it's done on the inside, done on the outside, we're going to apply the same laws, and accordingly, the same laws includes the kivus of the washing, meaning whether it's done on the inside or the outside, whether it's the chatos that have the zrika that are done outside and you get to eat the meat, or the zrika is done on inside, the types of chatos that have the zrika is done on the inside, it's not eaten, it doesn't matter, as long as it's a korban, a chatas from an animal, as opposed to a chatas that's from an oaf, from a bird. Indeed, there is going to be a requirement if the blood splatters on the bigdei kuhuna, the clothing of the kohen, there is a requirement to wash that clothing. Mishnah Beis continues from the prior Mishnah, talking about when is there a requirement to do a laundering of the clothing of the korban when it gets splattered or spritzed with the blood of the korban chatas. And what we're going to learn in this Mishnah, we'll just do a little bit outside first, is that this applies when the korban chatas is a kosher chatas. It's a kosher kor chatas, and the kohen got spritzed with the blood. Indeed, that's when kivus, the laundering, is required. However, if it is a chatas psula, and that's how our Mishnah starts, chatas psula, ein damata on kibus. If it's not a kosher chatas, then even though the blood got on the clothing of the kohen, there's no requirement of kibus. That is based on a drasha and a pasuk that says, vasher yizem midama ala beged. If you have the splattering, the spritzing of the blood on the beged of the kohen, then the word here is midama, from the blood. It's not all of the blood. It's sometimes you're going to have blood that is going to be required to be washed, sometimes not. Midama, from the blood, of the blood. And accordingly, the drasha is, if it's a kosher korban chatas, you need to do kibus. If it's not a kosher korban chatas, you don't have to do kibus. So just another additional point we'll learn in the next Mishnah, when we're talking about that, if you have a kosher korban chatas, you need to wash wash the clothing, if the blood gets on the clothing of the Kohen, talks about if the blood gets onto the clothing before the Zrika. But if it's after the Zrika, even if it's a kosher korban, there's not going to be a requirement of kibbutz. So back in our Mishnah, chatas psula ein damata on kibbutz. If you have a chatas, it's not a kosher chatas. You don't have to do the kibbutz on the clothing of the Kohen. Bein shaya la shas kosher, bein shalohaya la shas kosher. We're talking now about the Zrika, and we're saying whether or not the Zrika could have been done in a kosher fashion. So let's read this inside. Bein shahaya lashas kosher, whether the blood was fit to be spritzed, to the Zrika to be done. So that's bein shahaya lashas kosher. It could have been done. The Zrika could have been done, but the psul had not happened yet, but something happened at that point. Bein shalohaya lashas kosher, or it never had the ability to do the Zrika properly. There was a psul earlier on. And now we're going to have to define what do these two things mean. Ezohi shahaya lashas kosher. What are we talking about? Indeed, that up until the Kabbalah and the Kabbalah itself, because again, we have the steps of the korbanos, we have a shchita of the animal, and then we have the Kabbalah, the receiving of the blood into a kli, and then we have the halacha, bringing it to the Mizbeach, and the Zrika. Four stages. So ezohi shahaya lashas kosher. What are we talking about? That Zrika could have been done correctly. It could have been done in a kosher way because the Kabbalah was also kosher. Everything was looking up and good until the Kabbalah. Kabbalah was kosher, but something happened between the Kabbalah and the Zrika that invalidated the doing of the Zrika. So shahaya lashas kosher, examples as follows, three examples. Shelana, you did the Kabbalah correctly, but then you didn't do the Zrika in time and it became nighttime. As soon as it becomes nighttime, you can no longer do a kosher Zrika. So it had a Shas kosher. It could have been done. Had you done the Zrika in time, it would have been a kosher Zrika, but you had from the Kabbalah, you had Lana, you waited too long. Or after the Kabbalah, but before the Zrika, Shenitba, that blood became Tame. Or Sheyatza, after the Kabbalah again, you did the Kabbalah acceptable, everything is looking good, you could have had a kosher Zrika, but before the Zrika, it was taken outside of the courtyard of the Mizbeah, of the Mishkan. Those are all examples when you had a Shasa kosher. It could have been done, the Zrika could have been done in a kosher way, because everything was looking good up until the Kabbalah, but something happened between the Kabbalah and the Zrika, which invalidated the doing of the Zrika. The Ezohi Shalohaya Lashas kosher. What is an example that you didn't have a Shas kosher? In other words, there was a psul that happened earlier on. You never were able to do the Zrika in a kosher way because something happened earlier at the Kabbalah earlier stage. So either you had a psul at the Shchita stage, or you had a psul at the Kabbalah stage, but there was a psul earlier, you never would have been able to do the Zrika in a kosher fashion. So nishchata chutz lizmana v'chutz limkoma, an example would be that you never had a shasa kosher, the Zrika could have never been done in a proper way because you had a psul of chutz lizmana or chutz limkoma at the shchita stage, as we discussed earlier in the second parak in detail, that you had a bad machshava at the time you were doing the shchita, that you were going to do, for example, you were going to do the zrika outside of the proper time or the proper place, or you were going to eat the korban outside of the proper time or the proper place, or you're going to burn the innards of the korban out of the proper time or the proper place. That's all different psulim of chutz lizman, chutz limkoma. But relevant for us is here that you had that psul, that machshava, that inappropriate thought that invalidated the korban at the shchita phase or at the Kabbalah phase. V'shikiblu psulim, maybe many take out the next word, v'zarkur, so we'll just read it without that. V'shikiblu psulim estama, or a puzzle, somebody who shouldn't have been doing the Kabbalah, for example, a non-Kohen or an onen, even if a Kohen, that the Kabbalah was done by somebody who is psul. So we have, again, we have a psul, either at the shchita or the Kabbalah phase. So this is considered that there was never a shasa kosher. This rika could have never been done in a kosher way. Either way, whether it was a shasa kosher or not a shasa kosher, it doesn't matter. The chatas psula, as we started the Mishnah, even if the clothing of the Kohen gets splattered, spritzed with the blood, it doesn't matter because it's a chatas psula. There's no requirement of laundering those clothings. Mishnah Gimel is going to continue discussing when we have blood that sprinkles from the korban chatas, when is kibus, when is laundering of the garment going to be required, and when is it not going to be required. And we're going to talk about a number of situations when it's not going to be required. We're going to start out with three initially in the reish of our Mishnah. And the general rule that we're going to see is that kivus, laundering of the garment, is only going to be required from blood that entered into the kli shareis. So on the Kabbalah of the dam, there was a Kabbalah into the kli shareis. From there, if the blood spritzes from the kli shareis, or it had been in the kli shareis, all the way up until the time that we have the zrika. And once we do the zrika, thereafterward, any blood that spritzes, even if it was originally in the kli shareis, or even if it came out of the kli shareis, it doesn't matter. Once zrika is done, again, there's going to be no requirement for the kivus. So we have a very limited time, very limited window between when we do the Kabbalah and then the zrika. So from the Kabbalah up until the zrika, and it was a kosher Kabbalah, the blood went into the kli shareis, and then it spritzes on something, that is when there's going to be a requirement for a kibus, for laundering of that garment, as follows. Mishnah Gimel, nitaz min hatzavar al habeged. If the blood was splattered directly from the neck of the animal, that's where the shechita is done, onto the beged of, for example, of the Kohen Gadol. We'll see in a little bit that it's not only the Bigdei Kahuna, but it was a beged, as the Pasuk tells us, that this halacha of kivus, and when you get blood on it from the chatas, applies if it lands on a beged, literally a garment. So if it went, the blood went directly from the neck, straight to the beged, straight to the garment, and never went to the into the kli shareis, ain't no town kibus. There's no requirement to do kivus on that garment. Next, min hakeren umina yesod, after the zrika. So this is the second qualification that we're having, after the zrika itself. So you did the zrika on the keren, you did it on the top of the mizbeach where the korban chantas is done, and thereafterward, after the zrika, the blood came in shritz. It could have ricocheted off that corner, or it came from the kli shareis, it doesn't matter. But it was after the zrika or thereafter, and min hayasod, even continuing, it's in the kli shareis, and after you did the zrika, you're about to pour it on the base of the mizbeach to discard that blood. It doesn't matter, because this is also after the zrika. Then ain't no town kibus. There's no requirement of kibus if the blood indeed did get on a bag. And a third example here, nishbach al haritzba v'asafo. If the blood, instead of having a proper Kabbalah, it never got into the kli shareis, but it went straight from the neck of the animal onto the floor, and then afterwards you gathered it together and you put it into the kli shareis, enotan kibus, again, if that blood thereafterward would get onto a beged, there's no requirement of kibus, of laundering it. And now the Mishnah explains why. Ein taon kibus ela hadam shenizkaba bekli. The only requirement, the time that we have a requirement of kibus, is if the blood went from the neck of the animal into a kli, into the kli shareis, v'roi lahazaya, and it is able, it's kosher, that blood is kosher, it's fit to do the hazaya, to do the zrika. But in our example here, when it fell on the floor, not into the kli shareis, even though you collected it together and you put in the kli shareis thereafterward, that is not roi lahazaya, that is not fit to do the hazaya with it, it's not kosher to do the zrika. And accordingly, if that blood gets on a beged, there's no requirement of kibus. Continuing, as we said, this halacha, that if you have blood that comes from the kli shareis up until the time of the zrika, and it gets onto a beged, it gets onto literally a garment, you have a din of kibus. Now, till now, we've been saying that the most primary example has been the bigadim, bigdei kahuna, the clothing of the kohen. And in fact, that is the case. But we're going to expand this concept now that it's other things that are considered a beged, a garment as well. So, for example, nitaz al ha'or. How about if it was accepted into a kli shareis, the blood, and thereafterward it sprinkled, it splattered onto the hide of the animal, straight onto the hide of the animal. So now it's going to depend in the shita. Ad shelo hupshat, if that hide is still attached to the animal, it has not been removed yet, the animal has not been skinned, eino taon kibus, there's no requirement to do kibus on that hide. It is considered a beged typically if it had been removed, but it's still attached to the animal. It's not a garment. And accordingly, there is no requirement of kibus on it. Nishahufshat, however, after it has already been removed. And this is going to be the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. We're going to see a machlokas on it. The Baruch Tanur explain what's going on here. Mishahufshat hevi roi lekabel tuma. Once it has been removed, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it is roi lekabel tuma. That's a beged. Our standard is a beged. A beged is a garment. A garment is something that can be mekabel tuma, so anything else is going to be, in order to have this requirement of kibus, is also going to have to be a beged, as defined by something that's roi lekabel tuma, that can receive tuma. So accordingly, according to Rabbi Yehuda, as soon as you remove that hide, even if it's not in its final form, you would otherwise want to complete working on this hide and make it into shoes or make it into a leather belt or something. But you haven't done it yet. But because, this is the Baruch Tanur explaining, because you could think, you know what, I'm done on this hide, I'm going to use it to cover my bed, or I'm going to use it as a mat on the floor or something. So it could be in its final form, and all you would need to do is think about it. Okay, I'm done with it. Then it would be roi lekabel tuma. Accordingly, says Rabbi Yehuda, mishahufshat, as soon as you take it off, taon kibus, and the blood would get on it from the klishares, indeed there would be a requirement of kibus. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, that is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda is learning from the pasuk that when it says beged, it could be anything that's similar to a beged. It doesn't have to be exactly a beged, but something similar to a beged would suffice, that the din of kibus would apply as well. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Rabbi Eliezer disagrees. Af mishuhufshat eno taron kibus, even though it's been removed, because this hide is not in its final form. If you have plans to do something else with it, to make it into those shoes or something like that, accordingly, it is not roi lekabel tuma yet, and there is no deed in kibus if the blood gets on it. Continuing, we're going to have three additional halachas when it comes to kibus. Eino taon kibus ela mekom hadam. When we talk about doing kibus, when we talk about doing the laundering because the blood got onto a beged, only the specific spot that the blood is required. So you can do spot cleaning on this. You don't have to do full cleaning on the garment. Only spot cleaning is required. It's based on a pasuk. V'davar shu roi lekabel tuma. This is a repetition of what we saw in the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, and this is why we actually paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, that this concept, this halacha of kibus, applies to something that is roi, that indeed has the possibility of being mekabel tuma. So when it comes to that, the removed skin, because that could be mekabel tuma, as soon as I think about it, that I'm done working this hide, now it could be mekabel tuma. It's not something that has to be mekabel tuma right now. All that's lacking is my thought that I'm going to think, oh, I'm done working on this. So indeed, that would be sufficient. So we pass on like Rabbi Yehuda. And Veroy Lekiba's third qualification requirement is that it is something that can be laundered. So it's something indeed that is the type of material that can be laundered. For example, a leather can be laundered, certainly material can be laundered, and the Baruch Tanur and others explain what we're coming to exclude here is clay eight. So wood items, those aren't items that you launder, or other solid materials, that is what would be excluded. So here we see that the definition of beged is not limited only to the bigdei kahuna, the clothing of the kohanim. It's not limited also to in the certain circumstances we discussed, the leather, the hide of the animal, what's been removed, at least according to Rabbi Yehuda, but it would apply also to other materials as well that are similar to garment. They're a garment, but it would not apply to solid materials. So if solid materials had the blood spritzed on them from the klisharis, indeed, there would not be this chiyuv, this obligation of laundering. Mishnah Dalet is a direct continuation of the prior Mishnah. This concept, the obligation of kibus, when the blood splatters on a beged, says Mishnah Dalet, echad a beged, this applies to a beged, literally a garment, ve'echad a sack, it also applies to a sackcloth, ve'echad ha'or, it applies also to leather. Those are all considered a beged for our purposes. They all are te'unim kibus b'makom kadosh. And not only do they require kibus, the laundering, but also it has to be b'makom kadosh. That's based on the psukim that says that it has to be in the azara, in the actual courtyard of the base of Mikdash. And in addition, the psukim, these are all in Parsha Saf, continue and give another couple of requirements that also have to be b'makom kadosh, also have to be done in the azara as it relates to the cooking of the korban chata. So number one is ushviras klicheres b'makom kadosh. Indeed, if you cooked that meat of that korban chatas in a klicheres, in an earthenware vessel, it has to be broken in the Azara of the Beis HaMikdash as well, and another halacha that also applies when it comes to the preparation of the meat of the Korban Chatas, Umirika, the purging, Ushtifa, the washing out, the rinsing, B'kli Nechoshes. Indeed, if the preparation of the cooking of that Korban Chatas meat was in a copper vessel, you also would have to clean those vessels, that vessel or those vessels, B'makom Kadosh, in the Azara as well. So we have three halachas now, the Kibus, and also the Shviras Klicheres, the breaking of the Klicheres, the earthenware vessel, and also the cleaning out of the Kli Nechoshes, the copper vessel, all of those relating to the Korban Chatas would be done B'makom Kadosh in the Azara, in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash. And continuing, however, Zechomer B'Chatas Mikotshei Kadoshim, this is the stringency when it comes to the Korban Chatas relative to the other Kodshei Kadoshim that we would say these or this halacha doesn't apply to. So what's going on here? So the Bar Tanur explains as follows, Zechomer Akibus Kai. We mentioned three halachas in the reish of this Mishnah. We mentioned that there's a din of kibus when it comes to the Korban Chatas that we've been talking about throughout the parak. And there's also this din of Shriras Klicheres, and there's also the din of cleaning out the Kli Nechoshes that the Chatas was cooked in. So what are we saying now? That they only applies to the Korban Chatas and not the other Korbanas of Kodshei Kodashim. So the Bar Tanur is saying that this is only talking about Kibus. Kibus is a stringency that we have specifically with the Korban Chatas that would not be required of the other Kodshei Kodashim. However, those other two halachas of Shiras Klicheres, the breaking of the earthenware vessel when a Kodshei Kodashim was cooked in a klicheres, and also the cleaning out, washing of a Kli Nechoshes of the copper vessel, those would also apply, and also both of them in B'makam Kadosh, in the Beis, in the Azara, the Beis HaMikdash, they would apply to other Kodshei Kodashim. However, just to mention that there are other opinions on it that also say those other, or at least some of those other stringencies, also only apply to the Chatas, but not other Kodshei Kadashim. Mishnah Hey, and thereafter Mishnah Vav are continuations of the prior Mishnah, where we're learning specific halachas as it applies to the Korban Chatas, that if some of the blood under certain circumstances wind up on a beged, it has to be cleaned in the Azara. Then we also learned as it applies to the Korban Chatas that if you have a klicheres, an earthenware vessel that is used to cook Chatas meat in it, it has to be broken. And also we learned that if you have a Kli Nechoshes that is going to be a copper vessel, that you are not going to break, you are going to have to thoroughly clean it. So we're going to discuss the details in this Mishnah, the next Mishnah, in these regards. So Mishnah Hey starts out with talking about the requirement of cleansing that blood off of a beged. So beged shiyatza chutz lekalayim. We had that beged, you were supposed to clean it inside of the, literally the curtain. There was a curtain in the Mishkan, there was a wall in the Beis HaMikdash around the Azara, but you took it out before cleansing that beged. It was taken out of the courtyard. You have to bring it back in. Nichnas u'mechabso b'makom kadosh. You bring it back in and you clean it in makom kadosh. It's inside the courtyard where it should have been cleaned to start with. But what happens if somebody took it out? They shouldn't have taken it out, but somebody took it out of the Azara and it became tameh. If that beged becomes tama, you're not allowed to bring it back in. So nit machutz lekalayim, if it, when it was taken out, it became tama outside of the courtyard. Koro, you have to rip a majority of it. And when you rip a majority of it on a d'oraisa level, it removes the tuma. And accordingly, it can now be brought back in. V'nichnas, bring it in. And now you mechabso b'makom kadosh, you do the kivus, you clean off the blood from that korban chatas in the Makom Kadosh, in the Azara, where it should have been done originally. So that's as it applies to that first halacha, if you have the beged that has the blood on it. The second halacha that we mentioned, if you have that klicheres, siyatza chutz leklaim, you were supposed to break that klicheres inside of the Azara. But what happens if somebody took it out before that happened, before it was broken? So nichnas, bring it back in. Mishovro b'makom kadosh, and do what you were supposed to do, break it in the Azara. And it's similar to the Reisha, as we saw, what happens if somebody took it out? They shouldn't have taken it out, but they did take it out. Nit machutz lekalayim, and it became tameh while it was outside of the Azara. Nokva, what you have to do is to puncture a small hole in it. that will remove the tuma on a deraisa level, so you can bring it back in. V'nichnas, bring it back in and do what you should have done originally. V'shovro b'makom kadosh. Now you break that kli cheres, that earthenware vessel, in the azara. Mishnah Vav is a continuation for the third halacha that we're talking about. If you have a kli nechoshes, if you have a copper vessel that something of a korban was cooked inside of it, shiatza chutz l'kalayim, before it was mariko shtifa, before it was purged and cleaned out properly, it was taken outside of the kalayim, and that mariko shtifa that we've been talking about has to be done inside the azara. So, as we saw in the prior Mishnah, nichnas, take it back into the azara, umorko shotfa, du mariko shtifa. We'll define what that is in the next Mishnah. The makom kadosh in the azara, where it should have been done originally. And just like in the prior Mishnah, what happens if that item was taken out of the azara and became tame there, so you can't bring it back in, as in its tuma state, nit machutz lakalayim, if it became tame when it was taken out, it shouldn't have been taken out, it was taken out, and it became tame outside the azara, pochaso, this in order to remove on a deraisa level the tuma of a clean akoshes of a copper vessel. Pochaso means you have to puncture a large hole in it, not a small hole in it, a large hole. And then, once removing the tomb on a deraisa level, v'nichnas, you can bring it back in. Umorka v'shotva b'makom kadosh, you can do the marika and the shtifa back in the azara. Mishnah Zayin goes into a lot more detail on the third halacha, that when we have a kli nechoshes, a copper vessel, and it applies to other metals as well that were used for the cooking and the like of something that's kodesh, a korban, meat of the korban, that we have a requirement of mariko shtifa. So we'll go into all the details on this. And the fundamental concept here is that when we have the residue of a korban, we still have the concern that at the end of the time that you're permitted to eat it, it becomes nosar. Just like we have meat, you're allowed, for example, to eat the shlamim for 2 days and one night in between, and thereafter becomes nosar and has to be burned. We have the concern about the residue as well in the pot, so you either have to purge it because it's nosar, or the concern is that it's going to cause a problem for the next meat that will be cooked in that kli. So either in of itself it has to be purged because it's nosar, or because it's nosar, it's going to cause a problem for the next kodesh that is cooked in that pot. So here we go, Mishnah Zayin as follows. Echad shebishel bo, we're talking about a kli, a metal kli that was either cooked in it, an offering, the meat of an offering was cooked in it, and even if it wasn't cooked in, ve'echad she'era lesochar oseach, even if you were just poured into it, for example, broth from a different korban, but it was poured in while it was boiling hot, this concept of mariko shtifa applies to that kli. Echad kodshe kodoshim, ve'echad kodshe kalim, whether it's at the higher level, kodshe kodoshim, the kodshe kalim, all of these te'uni mariko shtifa require mariko shtifa, which we will define shortly. Rabbi Shimon Omer, kodshe kalim enam te'uni mariko shtifa. Rabbi Shimon disagrees when it comes to kodshe kalim. They don't require mariko shtifa, only if it's kodshe kodshim does it require mariko shtifa. Now, just a little bit more background. The concept, as we mentioned before, is that we're concerned about nosar. So that's going to dictate the timing that indeed we should do the mariko shtifa, remove that residue before it becomes nosar. So now we're going to have a discussion of an exception to that rule. Typically, you're concerned, let's remove it, do the mariko shtifa before the nosar. But when it comes to the regalim, that you have a lot of korbanos being brought, for example, a lot of shlamis being brought, and you're going to constantly be reusing the klisharis, those kalim, over and over, and you will certainly be using it again before the end time that the residue will become nosar. So Rabbi Tarfon Omer, im bishal bo b'tchilas haregel, if you cooked in that kli, if you cooked in that metal vessel at the beginning of a chag, for example, Pesach or Sukkot, you used it, somebody brought a shlamim, you're going to use it throughout. Yivasha bo as kol haregel, you can continue cooking in it the rest of the regel, and you don't have to do mariko shtifa until the end of the regel, because again, each day when you cook with it, it's going to remove the residue of the prior usage before that prior usage, that prior residue becomes nosar, because you're using it so regularly, so it will take care of the problem and remove it before it becomes nosar. V'chachamim omrim, Adzman achila mariko shtifa. Literally, up until the end time of the eating, you have to do mariko shtifa. Here, we'll just read the Bar Tanur quickly. What does Chachamim add on for us? Lo yehei ben sof abishul netchilat mariko shtifa. You have to be careful that between the end time of when you cooked and you have the residue from, and when you do the mariko shtifa, elazman achila bilvad velo yoser mizeh. You can only wait up until the end of the eating of that specific korban, but you cannot wait longer. You have to be sure that before it becomes nosar, you do marika ushtifa. Now we're going to define what is this marika ushtifa that we've been talking so much about. So when it comes to marika ushtifa, we have a similar concept when we have a kos of birkas hamazon, and this is talked about in the Gemara in Brachas, that says that for a kos of bracha, if you have a cup that you're going to use for birkas hamazon, you're going to say have wine in it for birkas hamazon, you also have to do marika ushtifa. And marika there means cleaning out the inside of the cup, and shtifa is cleaning off the outside of the cup. So the same thing applies here. Marika, when we say marika, that we have to clean out this metal vessel that's being used for cooking of korban meat. Marika kamarika sakos. It means the same thing when it comes to the kosher bracha, the kosher birkas hamazon that you're going to put wine in. You have to clean the inside of it. Ushtifa kishtifa sakos. And shtifa means cleaning the outside of the kos. And now marika, we're going to take out bechamim. Many take out bechamim. Marika ushtifa batzone. And what we're talking about is using cold water. You don't need hot water for this. We simply want to purge out when it comes to the clean of choshes or other metal. We want to make sure that we clean the inside and the outside, but we don't have to use hot water. On the other hand, we're going to now mention a time that when somebody cooks, v'hashpud v'ha'askala, when you use a spit or a grill, so we're using it with heat in order to cook a korban on it, so we're barbecuing it, a spit or a grill, magilin b'chamim, there we're required to purge the residue meat with chamin, with boiling hot water. It's not sufficient to use cold water. Mishnah Ches is going to continue talking about pots and cooking in the pots when we have kodshim, when we're cooking our offering in it, but it's going to get a little bit more complicated because we're going to talk about tarovas when we have mixtures in that pot. What's the halacha going to be? So the Mishnah says as follows: Bishel bo kodshim v'chulin. If we put together in the same kli something that is meat that's kodshim and meat that is chulin, or another example, we're talking about different levels of kedusha, or kodshim kodashim v'kodshim kalim, or you have one piece of meat that's kodshim kodashim and another piece of meat that is kodshe kalim. So here the Mishnah says it's going to depend. Do we have an asinas of tam? Do we have a transference of taste or not? And that will impact three different halachas in each instance. So the Mishnah starts as follows: im yesh behem benosin tam. If indeed there is tam, in other words, the kodshim put tam into the chulin, or the kodshe kodashim put tam into the kodshe kalim. In that situation, how are we going to treat B? How are we going to treat the chulin or the kodshe kalim? Do we have to treat it like the kodshim itself, the holier thing, or not? So when there is a tam, indeed we're going to have to treat that be, the recipient of the tam, stricter, just like the giver of the tam. So we're going to have to treat the chulin like it's kodshim. We're going to have to treat the kodshe kalim like it's kodshe kodashim. So the Mishnah indeed spells that out, but the Gemara, we're going to have to fill in some language from the Gemara, because the Gemara says that there is language missing. Chasuri mechner v'hachit ketani. So we're going to start as follows: im yesh ben benos en tam. Indeed, if there is a transfer on tam from the stricter one, from the holier one to the less holy, hare hakalim ne'echalim kechamurim. That be the less strict one, the more kal one, has to be eaten like the stricter one. So the example would be if it's kodshe kodashim and kodshe kalim together, the combination, the tarovis, we're going to have to treat that kodshe kalim like kodshe kodashim. So it's going to be eaten only in the Azara, not like kodshe kalim that can be eaten outside of the Azara throughout Yerushalayim. And it's going to have to be eaten only by the zichrei kuna, male kohanim, not by anyone else. And it's only going to have to be eaten for the shorter amount of time of kodshe kodashim, if it's that's the situation, rather than the kodshe kalim. So that is hare hakalim ne'achalim kachamurim. We're going to have to eat the more kal one based on the stricter standards of the recipient, because the giver of the tam. And also another halacha, there's going to have to be merika ushtifa. We're going to have to, because there's tam, we're going to have to do the merika, the cleaning out inside and outside of the kli there afterward, to make sure there's no nosar left over in that kli. And also the recipient of that tam is going to be metami b'maga, which means that it's going to give tuma to a third party, to other food, because now it's treated like the stricter of them. So it's metami b'maga. However, and this is continuing the addition of the Gemara, if there is no nesinas tam, if the stricter of the two pieces of meat does not give tam to the less strict one, accordingly, we don't have all these stringencies when it comes to the second piece of meat that did not receive tam. And accordingly, it doesn't have to be eaten like the stricter of the two. It can be eaten based on the more lenient. So the example would be if we have kochi kodashim and kochi kam, and the Kochi Kalim did not receive tam from the Kochi Kadashim, then that Kochi Kalim could be eaten throughout Yerushalayim, not only in the Zara, and it doesn't only have to be eaten by the Zichrei Kahuna, and it could be eaten for a longer amount of time based on its own requirement. And in addition, if there's no giving of tam, ve'enam tu'uni mariko shtifa, you also don't have to do the mariko shtifa, washing the inside and outside of that kli, because there was no tam given from the stricter one. There's no tam in the kli. Ve'enam posli b'magan. In addition, the second piece, the more kal piece, because it did not receive tam, it's not going to be posel something else b'maga. If it touches something else, it's not going to give it tam. It's not going to give it a tuma. Now we have one last halacha. What we're talking about now is if we have an offering that is disqualified and it touches another offering that is not disqualified. So the examples are going to be, not we're cooking them together, but rakik shenaga berakik. If you have a wafer from a mincha offering, they're both hot, and it touched another rakik. One was indeed disqualified, it was pasul, and one was not. Or similarly, v'chaticha b'chaticha. If you have, for example, a piece of meat, they're both hot, and one is disqualified, one's pasul, and one is not. So in this situation, if there is tam that goes from the one that is pasul to the one that is not pasul, in this situation, what the Mishnah is going to tell us is it's not that it makes the recipient of that psul, doesn't make the entire thing possible, but only the place where the tam is. So lo kol rekikin v'lo kol chatichos asrim, the entire rekik, the recipient rekik, doesn't become possible, and the entire chaticha, that meat that received the psul through tam, it doesn't become possible. Eino asul amakom shabal. It's only the specific place that received the tam. That is the place that we are going to have a problem with. That is the puzzle part, but the rest of it is not going to be puzzle. So we only have to be concerned about that one localized area when it comes to the situation that they were both hot and the giver of the tam was indeed puzzle. So it's the recipient is the specific place of the recipient where he received the tam, but not the rest of it.